Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
As human beings, every last one of us is created for a specific purpose. And it's impossible for any of us to understand what that purpose is as long as our present condition prohibits it. And our present condition is that we are prisoners of a sort. We live without knowing it within the confines of a certain order of our own mind, a certain order of our own consciousness, which we were never ever intended to remain the captives of. We grow up in a house and we have a mother and a father. It's a physical house, it's a physical father and a physical mother. And then the day comes when we leave that house. The day comes when we leave our parents and we come into a new house. We come under the guidance of a new understanding and an intelligence that gave rise to the whole system that we ourselves find ourselves in. But when the system that we find ourselves in becomes the very source of our suffering, as opposed to providing the steps that it's intended to give us naturally to a higher life, then we as human beings lose our way, and that's where we are now. And we're going to talk about a subject this morning that's part and parcel with this kind of imprisonment that each and every one of us suffers under and within. And we're going to take a long, deep look at it. We're going to make some wonderful discoveries. We're going to find out if it's possible for us as human beings. Well, I'll restate that. We will find out that it is possible for we human beings to change the kinds of relationships that we have with one another, with others that have harmed us or hurt us, with ourselves, and with, if you will, the events of our lives that we still hold that still hold us hostage in many ways. So the premise to start is the idea of being able to start our lives over. Not start them over the way we've been starting them over. How many of you understand that starting your life over only to find out that you wind up in the exact same place you were when you started it over isn't really starting it over? It's just running in a circle, which is what happens to us when we don't understand our condition. So we have to do some work. Each of us has to do some work. Don't you ever believe for a minute that anyone can do work for you. Nobody can change the relationship that you have with life presently. And I'll take a second to define the relationship, by and large, that you have with life presently. It's a cause of conflict to you. It's a cause of worry. It's a cause of sometimes bright expectations and hopes that eventually always prove themselves to be dust in the hands because it washes right through. The wind comes along and whatever you've built for yourself just blows away. Because that's the nature of this life on this planet. It's not a bad thing. This is the other thing you have to understand. It's not a bad thing that you can't keep your hands on anything. It's a good thing, except for the self that wants to hang on to everything. How many of you know the self, the hangy self? It does hang itself too, doesn't it? Before I can become the kind of human being who never again hurts another human being, either in deed or thought, because you may not know it yet, but you hurt other human beings. By the way, your facial expression hurts other human beings. Before I can be the kind of human being that never hurts another human being again, before I can change my relationship with the world around me and the things that run through it in terms of my friends and family, loved ones, I must change the relationship I have with myself. It is impossible to change the relationship that you have with the world around you without changing the relationship that you have in yourself with yourself. This is the secret teaching of the ages. It is the root of Christ's teaching because inside of it, for instance, we learn about the necessity for a new kind of mind. We learn about the possibility of a world within ourselves that is presently guarded not by something that is keeping us out because it is something so elevated and powerful and high that there's no way we can scale it, but because we have yet to scale the depths of our own ignorance. That's the only problem, is ignorance. And not ignorance like a bad ignorance, ignorance about what I don't understand. And I'll tell you where ignorance becomes bad. When I refuse to understand the pain that my own ignorance causes. That's when ignorance becomes bad. When I've had enough lessons in life and been lashed around by my own states and others, and then refuse to recognize that it's impossible for me to have the pain I do in life and with other people without me being a participant in it. Then a person refuses the lessons that life brings, the beautiful lessons, by the way, that we'll see that only love can provide. And instead of going through the change, the transformation that all of those things are intended to produce for us, they become individuals who simply wrap themselves deeper and deeper and deeper in the same nature that's the source of their suffering to start with. So first we have to see if it's possible. So take a deep breath. How many of you ever remember being a little kid? It's hard to remember, isn't it? When you got so much weight, you're carrying around quite a bit. It's hard to recall the times where it was just fun. You can't even do it now. It was fascinating to be a creature. Now, the child didn't know it was fascinated with life. There was nothing in it that was going, oh, wow. You know, like, oh, that's really heavy. Nothing like that. That was a child of the 60s. Children weren't doing that. They weren't going, oh, wow. They were in direct relationship with whatever it was that they were involved with. Because there was nothing in them calling themselves out to appear special. Any of you ever have blocks? Building blocks? Let me see hands. Remember building blocks? And usually those building blocks, I don't know if they still have such things, but they had letters on them. So you had two interesting elements. Now, when you're small, the first thing you do with a building block is what? You throw it. Basically, or you take two and you clang them together. Isn't that about right? That's the first thing you do. Why? Because that's your relationship with the block. That's all you know to do. First, you stare at it for a long time. Because what is this bizarre thing in my crib that hurts when I fall on it? Then you realize it's something different than yourself. This is formatory. Child, what's block? Then it realizes that this object that it's hand, because it drops it. It can leave the hand anytime the hand moves faster than the block can stay in it. So it gets the idea of dropping it. That's how they learn to throw food, by the way. Then little by little, two blocks, because now I can hold on. I don't have to hold on to one side of the crib with my hand. I can hold on to two blocks, and I can smash them together and then cry because my fingers were in the way. Now I have a new relationship with blocks. Then time passes, so to speak, and try to understand that what I'm getting at here is that my awareness of my relationship with these objects changes. And little by little, I start to realize, you know what? These aren't just good for clanging and for throwing. I can put them together. I can actually make something. Now I don't have a clue what it is I'm making, but they stack together. And that's pretty darn neat. That's good for about at least a year in that. Well, maybe not for you. I'm still building blocks. And you'll see, by the way, that we are. Then I begin to make forms. And depending on the kind of type the person has, maybe, you know, you build a fort. How, do you remember the first fort? You know, you didn't have much fun growing up, did you? First fort? Maybe the first geometric figure that you put together with the blocks? Because you start to understand that you can do something. Your awareness of these things outside of you allows you to do things with them you couldn't do before. Then you grow a little bit older. And you realize that not only can you form something with the blocks, but you can form something with those strange letters that are on the blocks. So you can build a cat. I better explain this to you. I can see. C-A-T. Cat. Now I have a form and a word. And the word has meaning to me because I've begun to understand the relationship between letters and forms and their order. And that child, little by little, begins to grow in understanding because his or her mind is beginning to foment. It's beginning to grow, take shape inside of itself, and understanding relationship, not just with forms, but with ideas, because the forms, the letters, relate to two things the child recognizes as being part of its understanding. Now this child begins to recognize that it can form words that have broader meaning than just cat. And here's where I want to leave the child and bring you into this, because I want you to understand that this formatory process inside of us never stops. Well, actually it does in a certain sense. It stops when, at a certain point in our development, our mind, in its lack of understanding, begins to take the form and the letters as being the actual thing that is represented by them. So that a person takes the word fear and believes that the word fear and the form of fear is the same thing as being afraid, and it's not. And in case I've lost you, I'll bring it back down quickly. What I'm saying is that at a certain point, we can recognize that we as beings, having transcended ideally the youth by which we became aware of the blocks and the letters, we're still forming things. We're still building things inside of ourselves, but we've lost track of the fact of not only what we're building, but what is building it. And in case you don't understand that, I'll bring it right to the point. Inside of you, every single day, there is something that is building cases against other human beings, building cases against life that didn't give you what you thought you should get, forming letters and ideas in those forms that allow you to relate not to life anymore, but to the idea that that form has inside of you, so that when you see inside of you the word resent, when you see the form of resentment, which is usually in the face of another human being or a condition that you can identify with for a moment, in that split second, the whole of you is seized by a form. A form that is a creation of a mind inside of yourself that is in darkness to itself, that is not conscious of itself and what it builds and what it relates to. And the whole point of the illustration of the child is that we're intended to continue to grow in our ability, and I'll say it differently, to relate to new and higher things. What if I take that word that's been formed in me called enemy? What if I take that word, that form in me that's called hurt, and instead of building it over and over and over again and standing at the foot of it and bowing down to it because it gives me a sense of who I am, what if understanding that my relationship with that form can be changed when I change my understanding of what these forms are and do to me?
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
How many of you understand this introduction to the talk? It's so important you do, because at present, the way that your life is that your mind throws in front of itself an old form, an old word, an old idea. And when it throws that old form, that old idea in front of itself, it sees what it has cast before itself, and it is cast in the form of that word. It is cast in the form of that idea, and that mind never knows that it has been made again in its own image. Our task, if we want to be free human beings, if we want a life of the divine, in the divine, you may say it the way you wish, a life in the light, a life, I'll say it even simpler, a life without the weight of fear in it. What does it mean, a life without the weight of fear in it? It means a life in which I'm no longer carrying around with me what he did, what she didn't do, what I didn't get, what never worked out. I never have to carry around anything. Think it to yourself. It's a good thought. I don't have to carry around these old accounts that have all of the ache in them. I don't have to bring with me into the relationship I have. I don't care what has happened in the past to you, because in the end, I'll say it as clearly as I can. If you want freedom, it begins with you discovering that there is no freedom that exists without you understanding the nature of the past that lives in you, the tyranny of the past, because it is a tyrant. But we don't see it as such. We don't even understand yet what I'm talking about, but that's okay, because we're going to. We're going to look at this subject so clearly that it begins to, we actually start to realize, here I am, and I have enemies. How many of you know you have enemies? I have enemies. And I don't, when I'm not thinking about them, I don't have them. It's kind of glorious. I'm sitting there, I'm eating my curds and whey, and I'm not thinking about fear of a spider. And then down comes a spider and sits down beside her. And what happens to her? Now she has an enemy. There's the enemy. There's the thing that's causing me the fear. Now, in the real world, by the way, if a spider comes down beside you, don't scream, okay? There's no reason to be afraid of a spider. You're smarter than a spider. Did you know that? No, I don't think so. We have to begin to understand what it means to forgive. If we ever want to be free, we have to understand what it means to forgive. And to understand forgiveness is really, on one hand, not a simple thing. Because the truth is that we are not ourselves capable, as we presently are constituted, as our present mind that has stopped at the level of development where it looks at the thought about the person, feels the experience that was connected to that thought, and then calls that thought an experience, the present moment. Our present level of development isn't sufficient to be able to forgive. But the conundrum of it is that inside of us, we experience the pain of carrying around with us all of the things in which we have been unable to forgive. And I'm going to give you three areas that I'm going to talk about, and then we're going to describe the elements that are necessary. There's the first idea, and this is not necessarily in order of importance, but you'll see how it all connects. The forgiveness of others. How many of you know that there are others in your life, and maybe they're not even alive anymore, that you can't forgive, that you haven't been able to forgive? And depending on the day, and this is much to the point of the talk, something happens. You could turn on the television and see a newscaster that looks like the person that upsets you. A phone call can come and someone can remind you of that person. Or life itself may just ask you to be involved with that kind of person. And in the instant of life stirring this center of ourselves, up pours all of this venom. Up pours all of this angst, a certain kind of conflict that we're sure when it comes into us. Now listen, is the proof that what we are experiencing in that moment is valid because of the amount of pain or fear or resentment that we have towards, now listen, not the person. Not the person, but towards the form, that thought that was formed and fashioned in our mind when the first thing took place. And that thing looms up, and the second that it looms up, I am a prisoner of the content of what has become before me. But then I do what? And this is key, because it runs through all of the teaching. Then I try to get rid of this image. I try to separate myself. I try to, by all accounts, prove to myself that the pain I'm feeling in the moment is due to this person or that condition. But the person and the condition that I am sitting and feeling the pain that I'm blaming on is a thought. It's a form in my mind that was built by a mind that named the experience, directed and extracted a certain sense of itself from, and every time it is stirred to see that again, it revisits that feeling of being a victim of that person. So that over and over and over again, without knowing it, as I start to feel the pain or the fear or whatever it may be in that relationship, I then try to get rid of it, or I think to myself what I have to do to that person. How many of you ever think to yourselves what you need to do to someone who's hurt you? When I'm trying to figure out what to do to someone who's hurt me, am I doing it to the person who hurt me, or am I doing it to that thought and image in my mind? You know the answer to that. I'm doing it to the thought I have. So here I am, and if you can see it, divide your little brain into two parts. Put a club and a little fist in each part of the brain, and then let the brain go at itself with these two clubs. Now, when the brain goes after itself, when this self goes after it with two clubs, because it says it's beating up on what hurt it, and then, of course, the more you beat up on what hurt it, the more you think what hurt you is beating up on you. Who's getting beat up? C'est moi. Me. I'm experiencing the pain. And the more I feel the pain, the more sure I am to have the enemy that I do, because they're doing this terrible deed. Now, does that sound a little crazy to you? It should. It's the action of a mind that can't see itself. It's the action of a mind that is, now, new words for you, that is a prisoner of a past presence. It is a mind that is a prisoner of a past presence. And to be a prisoner of past presence means that over and over again, that stored presence and the pain in it is revisited by a part of me that actually wants to have that visitation, because it confirms in a very strong fashion my certainty of who I am and what happened to me in life. So the forgiveness of others is the first one that we have to look at. How about this? How many of you know that you have that you're unable to forgive certain events in your life? I'll speak of one, not personally, but my mother, God bless her, God rest her soul, she never got over forgiving God. Why? Because he took her father away when she was small. It wasn't until literally the last weeks of her life, when I was able to talk to her about some of these things, that she began to understand that the anger that she felt towards life was due to the fact that she had had a great pain as a child, that then every event that came along proved to her that life had somehow conspired to take away from her the sense of love and comfort that she wanted. This was part of my mother's life, God rest her. So that this feeling of an event that took something away from me. And for some of you, an event where I never became what I was supposed to become. I could have been something special, but life conspired to take away from me my possibilities. And so I can't forgive life. And if that's not clear to you, what I'm saying is that inside of you, you're saying, I can't forgive God for giving me the life that he gave me. And I absolve myself of all responsibilities, because that's inside of that. Because if it weren't for the way things went, I wouldn't be this person so filled with anger or fear or sorrow. So full of self-loathing, because that's part of it, isn't it? How about that for a needing to forgive now instead of the events? How about the self that is born when these events are reconsidered and revisited over and over again? You go back and you start thinking about what didn't happen to you. Or how many of you know there was a time in your life where you could have done something different and you didn't do it? How many of you know that? Everybody. See, let me explain something to you. You're not alone. Every human being on the planet has those experiences. How do you expect to create inside of yourself a new mind, a new heart, and a new will unless you first reach beyond any doubt the conclusion that your present mind, your present heart, and your present will is not there working for the purpose of fulfilling you, but actually has an agenda of its own? Because that's the fact. Inside of this, I'll ask you to take a deep breath now, because you need to make a little stretch with me. Inside of this mind, how many of you know what it's like to be punished by a past presence? That means that could be as simple as 5 minutes ago. You know, you were having coffee with somebody and you said something really stupid. And then you sit down and you spend the next 32 years thinking about the thing that you said. And then you have to go find somebody to explain, not to the person you talked to, but to somebody else, how you really could have been different, but you didn't. And you're going to work it out one day. And then the mind spends the rest of its time thinking about that. It could spend 5 seconds, it could spend 50 years. Now, is that a free human being, or is that human being a prisoner? It's a prisoner. And what is that human being a prisoner of? That human being is a prisoner of their own past, aren't they? Yes or no? Now, what is the past that the person is a prisoner of? Because we're talking about forgiveness. I want to learn what it means to no longer carry with me anywhere I go the feeling that what I did or didn't do is something that I have to be punished for today. Because do you understand that until you're free of your past, until you are free of your past, and I'm not talking about just some stupid, spiritual, idiotic statement that you walk around and affirm to yourself in a mirror. I'm talking about what happens when a human being, through understanding the whole of themselves, through engaging their own mind and their own heart in the proper way, actually comes into a new nature that doesn't have the past as its reference point. Because if you can understand what it means to be a prisoner of the past, it means that my present moment is determined by referring to my past. I defer to it. Do you know what the word defer means? It means that in any given instant, the first thing that my mind does is it defers to what once happened. And when it defers to what once happened, am I in the present moment capable of making a new choice and starting over? Or have I surrendered myself and the possibility of a new mind and a new heart to an old mind and an old heart? Listen, that is the essence of what we'll call now the will of unforgiveness. The will of unforgiveness.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
We have in us the will of unforgiveness. It doesn't matter what you say you have in you. What matters is what rises in you when that little pot, when that self gets stirred by the presence of a person or an event. That's what matters. And to understand the will of unforgiveness is a great thing. Oh, if you could take what I was saying to you, and instead of pushing it away because you feel threatened by the idea of, and whether you know it or not, who would I be without having my past to refer to? You want to know? You'd be happy. You want to know? You'd be kind. You want to know what you'd be without your past to refer to? You wouldn't have the ambition that you do. And I don't mean ambition in terms of finding excellence and being an excellent person. I mean that you wouldn't be compelled to move along the lines that this world has set out before you in order to prove to yourself that you're as good as this world has told you you're supposed to be. Let me explain something to you. This world doesn't know anything about goodness. It hasn't a clue about what goodness is. Why? Because it's too content with proving to itself that its incessant conflict, that embroiled state of itself born out of trying to prove that what it did in the past is the proof of its rightness. It isn't until a person starts to understand, you know, if I could examine this, here comes an event. And this is what you must do. If I could be awake to myself, here comes a moment. And in that moment, I'm sitting there having my curds and whey, I'm drinking a cup of coffee, I'm eating a piece of bread, whatever I'm doing. Not a bad day. And then, boom! All of a sudden, I am thrown into a cell. And when I'm thrown in the cell, the only thing that the cell, listen to me, the only thing that the self that gets thrown in a cell knows to do is to sit inside the cell and point its finger at the jailer. The jailer and the self in the cell are one thing. It is the beginning of understanding that, of going through what we're talking about right now, and I'm going to kind of lay it out now. In order for a human being to be able to have forgiveness, they must have love. Love is a, what shall I say? Love is born in us as we understand and recognize the need for a new mind, a new heart, and a new will. The new mind that is the first prerequisite for love to be in our lives is a mind that starts to understand, and this is so good, that mind starts to understand, I have to learn to think for myself. That mind that is capable, that seed inside of a human being that is capable of becoming something other than what that seed is, that mind has to look out and say, you know, how many have been angry with somebody for a long time? How about just with yourself? I can't forgive myself. See, that mind in you is a mind, the seed of a mind. That has the capacity to begin to equate its experience with its content. And only the mind that can begin to experience what it goes through, the quality of its moment, with the content that it's in relationship in that moment, only that mind can begin to discover that the reason that it continues to be a prisoner is because it continues to live from a prisoner mentality. And a prisoner mentality is anything that blames anything outside of you for the pain you have. That is a prisoner mentality. Why? Because what are we blaming? Is it really outside of ourselves what we blame? Was there a person who did something terrible? Yeah. Believe me, this planet's filled with toxic, terrible human beings. Believe me. In fact, you don't even have a clue how much this planet is filled with beings like that. But does that mean that I should spend my life running, hiding, hating? No, it doesn't mean that. It means that the very condition that prior to this understanding that we're gaining, that prior to that condition, I'm a captive, I see it. I don't want to be like this. I don't want to be wrapped up in some kind of dark state because something in me revisits the past. But up to this moment, I never knew that the pain that I feel isn't because of what's taking place in the present. But it's born out of something inside of me that goes and it becomes a prisoner of this past presence. Now, I said there's a will of unforgiveness. The will of unforgiveness is what drives this engine. And what is this will of unforgiveness? Think about it, will you? How many of you feel forgiving towards others who have hurt you when you think about them? You don't. Obviously. Why? Because when I think about them, first of all, it is not I that brings them up. How many of you would put a hot skillet in your hand on purpose? We would never do it. But something in me will call up a person, an event, a condition, or a condition outside of myself will remind me of a person. In that moment, what happens? Something in me seizes it, doesn't it? Doesn't it just grab onto whatever it was that happened or whoever it was that I blamed for my pain? It just seizes it. Or I just seize a thought about myself, same thing. Then when I seize that, in that moment, I experience the pain that we describe. Now, listen to me, what happens? Because this is the will of unforgiveness. Now, because I'm in pain, I am given, in quotes, all of the strength, all of the wisdom, all of those things that I feel are true and right for me to act towards my adversary. The will of unforgiveness is what keeps resentments alive because all it has to do is touch that hot coal of that past relationship that couldn't keep itself in place, whatever it may be. And as soon as it touches it, in floods blame. Blame is this creature. Blame is a form that the will of unforgiveness produces in order to keep the self in place that feels as though the pain it has is due to the person it blames. But this new mind that I'm talking about, it actually sees this. It starts to recognize. It may not have the power to do anything yet. We're going to get to where the power comes from. It starts to see, you know, I wouldn't be feeling the way I'm feeling unless I was thinking the way I was thinking. I mean, that's pretty simple, isn't it? I wouldn't be feeling the torment I'm feeling if my mind wasn't bringing up these tormenting forms. And it calls the tormenting forms, which themselves are aspects of my past, it calls them the present moment. And it says I have to protect myself in the present moment from these forms. But what is it actually going on inside of me, apart from a certain part of my nature that I have no present clue to, calling on forms that are past and buried inside of myself so that it can remain the one who then, by blaming what it feels and sees inside of itself for being my condition of pain. And oh, I tell you what, when you start to realize that these thoughts and feelings that come back flooding into you with all of the fear they hold, that they don't have the right to be there. They don't have the right to be there. You grant it to them. Every time you think about what someone did or didn't do, you are granting the power to that will of unforgiveness, because the will of unforgiveness is an unliving will. It is an unliving creature. It is the dead, because it is generated out of the past, considering the past. It is the dead. Real life is merciful. Real life is pure forgiveness, because it understands that all conditions are continually changing, and the self that is a part of that life changes with it and carries nothing from the past forward with itself. So that's the first aspect, the new mind. The second aspect is the idea of a new heart. And what does it mean, a new heart? It means that just like the new mind that begins to gain freedom. Do you understand that there's freedom in realizing that whatever it is that I have holding me a captive right now doesn't have the right to do it? I'm not saying I'm free of it, but do you realize that the split second that I see that I'm a content captive of my own mind, in that instant, I have the freedom to think towards my own negative states instead of being someone who is thinking from them. How many of you understand that? Important idea. Freedom. New mind. Freedom. Ah. I always thought that the thoughts that came up inside of me about whoever it was that did whatever they did that I can't forgive, I always thought they were my thoughts. No, they're not my thoughts. They belong to something that lives inside of me that calls itself me, but it is not I. And I never knew that, so I was never free to challenge it. I was never free to say, wait a second, I don't have to think that way. Because I'm outside that circle for a split second when I have that understanding that this new mind brings. Same with a new heart. See, a new heart allows a person the freedom to be in the present moment with someone or something, and in comes that we'll call it the stirring. In comes that thought, that feeling, in comes the event, and it brings up what happened some time ago. And in that moment, the new heart is the heart that recognizes that while it feels inside of itself all of the suffering or the fear or the grief connected with what happened once upon a time, that that's not the limit of its world. That the heart, the real heart, the heart being born in a human being, it's not limited to what it thinks and feels about from yesteryear. How ludicrous to think that the sum of my emotional experience should be somehow or other governed by a thought that I'm revisiting with pain in it. That this heart that's being born is capable of being in relationship with the full present moment. And the full present moment and the awareness of it makes it clear to that heart that I have other opportunities, other kingdoms that I can be a part of, rather than being a captive of the conflict generated from my own reconsideration of the past. And then that heart goes, and more than that, wait a second. Ooh, now I'm beginning to see something. I know that this feeling that I have of suffering, of anger or fear, I know this feeling is darn right, meaning it's right there. But my mind now, my new mind, sees that the reason that the feeling is real is due to a lie inside of myself. And the lie is that something in me is revisiting and reliving. And it's a lie because I don't have to derive my life from that lie. So see, now, new mind with new freedoms, new heart with new freedoms, married together. And then comes the new will. Then comes something that's born out of understanding with one's mind the proper order of things, where things belong, what should and shouldn't be, meaning what limits me, what hurts me. The heart that can recognize it has far broader choices in the moment. And out of that marriage of those two things comes this new will. And what's the new will? I won't go along with it. I won't carry forward with me one more day, one thought that posits itself in front of me telling me that there's someone to be punished for the way that I feel. That's the new will. The will that refuses to be made a subject of ignorance. The will that refuses to live in the darkness of days past, calling it the present moment because of how much pain there's in it. This is a will that can only be born, when the mind begins to awaken to itself and see the actual content of itself in work. And at the same time that the mind does, the heart begins to move in new ways because it lives in a broader world. It's no longer a captive of its own past emotional content. And then that new will comes in and it says, I don't think so. I don't think I'm going there today. I don't think I'm going to relive that thing one more time. Not because I don't notice in my own mind it bringing itself back for me to be a prisoner again, and my heart wanting, parts of my heart, so to speak, lower, parts of self wanting to go along with it, but because I can see this is stupid. I can actually, factually see that what wants to conspire inside of me is not the content of my full consciousness.
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks four times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GUYFINLEY.org.
Then I have the birth of a new will. And when you have the birth of this new mind and the birth of this new heart and the birth of this new will, when you put them together, you have the birth of love, because it is a new mind and a new heart and a new will as it begins to form inside of the human being, all three, that produces a coalescence, that produces an integration in that person of understanding with their mind, of emotional understanding with their heart, and with, listen, the very love that is being born in them, the discovery that it was love itself that led them to that discovery. And that person, that man or woman who starts to realize, boy, you know, I've spent so much of my life afraid of people. You know, for instance, how many of you have moments in your life where something takes place and you think to yourself, oh God, not that. What if that happens? Do you know what I'm talking about? Now, what is that exactly? What is that I don't want to happen? Is it that? Or is it in me, those blocks that were built when I was 7, 12, 15, 20, 50, whatever it may be at the age in which those things were still being formed, but without the wisdom of understanding that I'm in relationship with them and that the relationship I have with them can be changed by the light of understanding. And that trying to change, if you will, I remember one time, great, great man I knew, Vernon Howard, he made this simple illustration. He said that if a person's typing a word and they continue to misspell it on a page, that changing the typewriter isn't going to fix the problem. That they have to change their understanding of the word before it can be put on the paper properly. So we have to change our understanding of our enemies. We have to change our understanding of those that we think have hurt us. Because until we change our understanding of it, it doesn't matter what we do to the world around us, or for that matter, to the people we hold responsible. Because the self in us that lives that way continues to type out the word pain, fear, worry, and then we become the captives of our own activity, of our own imagination, in essence, because it boils down to that. Now, we've talked about these elements, the elements of forgiveness of others, of events, of ourselves, and then we've talked about the new mind and the new eyes and the new heart, the new will that's born of that. These elements are what produces freedom from the past. It is love that frees us from the past. This is something a lot of us don't understand in the smallest way, but it is only love that can free a human being from the past. Nothing else can do it. Nothing that a human being does to escape into a future where there won't be pain can free them from the past that is the progenitor of that. The only freedom there comes from the past comes because of the entrance and the formation in the human being of love. And that's where forgiveness comes. Forgiveness comes with recognizing all of the elements that we've been talking about, with realizing, to say it differently, that when I start to think about someone, when I get caught up in whatever it is that I'm afraid is going to happen, for that man or woman in that moment to realize that they were simply, and it's not a bad expression, they were lured into that. They were lured into it. And in the moment that I can see with my mind that I've been lured into thinking about something that's hurting me, Do I keep going with that? I don't. What do I do? brings us to the next point. Take another deep breath. This is why bringing in ourselves the end of the past can only help us become human beings who understand the nature of forgiveness. We have in us, all of us, a nature that in and of itself, it's not a problem. I mean, do any of you feed birds? Any of you have bird feeders? I feed birds. I feed a lot of wild animals. Not only, and by the way, have you ever noticed this? You ever notice that you can have one bird come and then it must go tell other birds? I know this is off the subject a little bit, but it really bothers me. I had a rock dove. Now, a rock dove is a pigeon on steroids. It's a wild dove the size of baby Huey. It eats 3 pounds of seed a day by itself. Well, I looked out one day and I saw a naturally occurring wild rock dove. I thought, oh, that's fantastic. Look at that, a new species. Next day, there were 2 rock doves there. I thought, well, he brought her sweetheart. You know, that's not that bad, a pair of rock doves. A week later, 4 rock doves. Now I have 12. 12. I can't keep feed in the feeders. And what was once a blessing, now I'm out there like a madman. Go away, go away. Birds of a feather flock together. Birds of a feather flock together. Inside of us, there is something that is content with having an enemy. And not only is it content with having an enemy, content with having that which we feel we have to blame for the way we are. That very nature keeps us from having freedom. It's so interesting to see how it works in this invisible circle in ourselves. Because when I'm angry or frightened or trying to get rid of a problem that I see as being the reason that I feel the way I do, the self that fights with the past is itself a creation of the past. There's no me wanting to free myself from an enemy until myself has brought up the enemy to free myself from. Then I'm embroiled. I'm actually caught inside of something that I can't see for the life of me. Why? Because I haven't had seated into my mind, I haven't had seated into my heart the knowledge that you're being given now. And more important than the knowledge that you're being given now, because some of you may have heard such thoughts before, is that then, and to the whole point of this talk about forgiveness, do you know that a seed grows because the sun warms it, doesn't it? And yet if you could look at it in the whole of itself, isn't the seed itself a creation of the sun? It is, in case you don't know. The stuff of a seed is the stuff of a sun. So here's this seed that is the stuff of a sun, and it is the sun that turns the stuff of that seed into a new form. And the point being here is that it's by the sun that a seed grows, because it is the sun growing in the form of a seed. If you could see it, it's beautiful to understand that. A tree is a kind of solar system, isn't it? Isn't every plant a kind of a solar system in itself? Here's the point. Love grows by love. Peace grows by peace. No peace grows by war. No love grows by enmity. And forgiveness grows by forgiveness. Nothing else can make forgiveness grow in you except understanding the nature of forgiveness. And the understanding the nature of the forgiveness requires the quite bold and in some ways immensely difficult task of realizing that in me is this will of unforgiveness. In me is that which won't let go. Because it doesn't know what to do in the moment if it can't refer to what once was, and it defers to the darkness. It defers to the darkness. And of course the darkness isn't going to say, open up your arms and eyes and ears and heart, man. Let it go, because it has no real bearing on the possibility of this present moment. It can't say that, because to say that would be its demise. And the darkness isn't going to bring about its own demise. Ignorance isn't going to bring about its ending. That's where the human being is a creature unlike any other creature, because it's created to understand the limitations of its own seed-like nature. And in the understanding of those limitations, to begin to do something that's unthinkable to the unforgiving will. and the unforgiving self that accompanies it. It's unthinkable to it. And you know what it had to do? Right in the middle of right in the middle of the lashing. And how many of you know that there's a kind of lashing that goes on? Whether you're thinking about what someone did to you or didn't, what you could have been, that there's a kind of lashing in that. Now, in the middle of the lashing, the pain gets pretty big. Lash, 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 ow, ow, ow. Ooh, strike back. Lash out. Separate myself from whatever it is that's causing this. Have nothing to do with it. That's what the mind says. And in the middle of that pain, what has to happen is that new mind that wants freedom and that new heart that gives you new eyes to see life with, it has to come to the surface. And in the midst of it, you have to recognize, all right, ooh, man. I, now here's the new I. Here's where love begins its birth in the human being. The new I steps forward and it begins to bear all things in the name of love. It begins to bear all things in the name of what is true and right and light. That I understands. It's not kingdom yet. It's not the heaven that we're aiming for. It isn't any of that, but it is its seed. It is its seed. I'm telling you about the seed that gives birth to a new life. And it is your responsibility to care for that seed. And to care for it means that you stop caring for what the dark seed, what that wrong part in you tells you you have to do about the pain you feel. You mustn't do anything towards the pain you feel predicated on what the pain is telling you to do. Pain is a seed that wants a pain tree. How many of you have a pain tree? Dude, I got a pain tree, man. It's the size of a 2,000-year-old oak. The tree can't be chopped down. It can't be chopped down. Every stroke that you take of your mind and try to wield it against the pain of the past makes the bark thicker, the roots longer. It's understanding that that causes a person right in the middle of having that axe in their hand going after what they see as being their enemy and the fear that it's producing that lets them lay the axe down. And they become what they've always were created to become, which is what? A person who starts to understand that forgiveness gives rise to forgiveness. That it isn't until I'm willing to pay. And it is. And this is factually. And you need to hear this because it's connected with the new idea, with the idea of a new mind. The whole idea of a real rebirth. It isn't until I'm willing to lay myself down that I discover that the self that I'm laying down was never me. I can never make that discovery. I can never have the freedom from the past that comes with that until I myself am willing to bear the wrath of that will of unforgiveness that at all costs wants to keep itself in me, a prisoner of its own machinations, its designs. And when I start to realize all that we've been talking about as you work at what I'm talking about, and may God give you the strength and the understanding to do it, because this is not an easy thing I'm talking about. But if you want to have real forgiveness, it begins with giving yourself up over and over and over again. And recognizing, not because you're trying to be some strong spiritual student or a disciplined whatever it is that you believe you're supposed to be, but simply because you're no longer going to compromise yourself in the name of what has kept itself out of sight, which is this past presence, this form that was built and continues to build itself in you. I tell you that there's great spiritual power, not in the words, but in understanding from yourself through direct action, making it experiential. You have to take what I've talked about and you have to be the one who understands, who sees the truth, and then applies your understanding and your wish to be different. You take that will of understanding and you lay yourself down with it. You do that, and I promise you that what gets up won't be the same man or the same woman that laid down their life. Something new will rise where you once were, and it will be free from the past, which means you'll be free to forgive.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit guyfinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.